and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz, and I'm not really here right now. We're not doing a live. This isn't live. Usually the show's live, but I'm up in Mount Vernon speaking to the Western Washington Agricultural Association as we speak. So it's pre-taped, although Nicole's still in here sitting. She is sitting in here live, and so she's going to be reading all your wonderful comments and appreciating them because they deserve to be appreciated. We are never going to, well, I won't say never, but just because I'm gone doesn't mean we want to skip the show today because there is so much going on. Per the usual, the legislative session has us very, very busy. A couple things I wanted to let you know about. I am going to be in Olympia tomorrow at noon. Let's Go Washington and Brian Haywood. They're going to be holding a rally on the north steps of the Washington State Capitol, 12 p.m. Brian Haywood wasn't in, it's funny because they're here, his initiatives, but he wasn't in town. He was in Japan the last time there was a rally, but it's really just about continuing this momentum around the six-pack and the initiatives and continuing to let elected leaders know that we're not going away. We're not going quietly into the night. And the timing of this is really good because we know that next week there are going to be hearings on three of those initiatives, which I think is going to be a spectacle in Olympia. So these are going to be extended hearings where you'll have public testimony from both sides, where individuals from the legislature can ask questions and offer their comments or whatever. Now, I have said that I think they're giving hearings to the ones that are least controversial, although I don't think they're going to support them anyway. But the three that are getting hearings next week are Initiative 2111, No State Income Tax, Initiative 2113, Reasonable Police Pursuit, really looking forward to that one, and Initiative 2081 on Parental Rights. Now, the three initiatives that are not going to be getting hearings, Democrats have already said so, are the three initiatives that, you know, are nearest and dearest to their heart because they're bringing in the most money. So Initiative 2117 to repeal the Climate Commitment Act, Initiative 2109 to repeal the capital gains tax, and Initiative 2124. None of those are going to be getting hearings in Olympia. And that's why I think it's important and why Let's Go Washington is having another rally on Friday, because they want to make sure that no one forgets that, yes, they're giving hearings to three of these, but they're not giving hearings to the most consequential ones, because they would undo some of these huge policies and taxes that are on the books for people, but also the initiatives that they've told the most lies about. I mean, we've already had multiple examples this week of state lawmakers telling, on the left, telling demonstrable lies about what would happen if these taxes are repealed. And that's why they're not having hearings, is they don't want to, on the record, have to have their facts, quote unquote, checked by people in real time. And then their narratives around these taxes, which have been completely false, are not going to withstand or would not withstand the test of a hearing. So anyway, it's going to be a big day in Olympia on Friday. It's going to be an exciting week next week with these hearings happening. And then we'll see what the legislature chooses to do. You know, on police pursuits, gosh, there's already enough Democrats who believe the police pursuit law needs to be fixed. Honestly, Democrats would be doing themselves a favor if they passed that initiative and it wasn't on the ballot in November, because you're going to have Dave Reichert, like, you know, 30-year law enforcement officer who's running on a law and order platform next to Bob Ferguson on the ballot. You really want there to be a police pursuit initiative when a big chunk of your party already thinks it needs to be fixed? It'd be really silly for them not to adopt at least a couple of these into law. So I hope to see some of you in Olympia on Friday at noon. All right. Oh, gosh. I'm so excited about this. So we had a story earlier on in the week that was about this homeless housing project in Kenmore that fell apart. So basically, the city of Kenmore had agreed to this housing, Plymouth housing project, but everyone kind of believed that it was for like low-income families, and then they were led to believe that it was going to be low-income veterans or the elderly, and then all of a sudden, nope, it's homeless housing. Like, nope, there's going to be people who are in active drug addiction who are staying in this housing, which is right by downtown. And that creates a whole other set of problems. And people felt just blindsided by it. So the citizens stepped forward and they pushed back. And then the council decided, okay, our citizens don't want this. It's not what we thought it was. And so we're not going to do it. And that led Governor Jay Inslee to call local leaders in Kenmore feckless.
There is a bill that I think is an important one. It's Bill 2474. This bill would really encourage local leaders to step up to the plate and show some leadership to site housing. This has been a problem. Most recently in Kenmore, we had a site for over 100 housing units ready, set to go, been well worked, financing in place, consistent with local zoning, but local leaders showed more fecklessness than leadership and killed the project.
Crazy. So the clip I played, so the bill that Governor Inslee came out, because after this project was killed in Kenmore, Democrats were like, we can't let cities do that. We need to force them to take these housing projects, whether their citizens want them or not. And they were pushing through this bill that would have done that. Thankfully, that bill is dead. I don't know if it's going to be brought back up next session. So the bill Inslee is pushing for there when he calls these local leaders feckless didn't go anywhere. But in response to what the governor said, there was a Kenmore City Council meeting, and the deputy mayor, Melanie O'Kane, was livid.
We had substantial public input regarding the Plymouth project, things that did not come to light without our public. And we had to make a fair, unbiased decision about what was right for the future of our city. And we made one. Listening to our community and being shamed by our county executive and our governor and members of the Democratic Party throughout our region is really galling.
Yeah, so I listened to them like, oh my gosh, Nicole, we need the deputy mayor on this show. So Nicole got in touch with her and she agreed to come on. And I will say, before we play this interview, she is not what I expected. I never talked to her before. And honestly, in listening to that clip, I thought she was like a red-blooded Republican who maybe already didn't like the governor. And that is absolutely not the case. So how long, generally speaking, has Kenmore been dealing with this Plymouth housing project overall?
We went to RFP, I think we decided to go for an RFP in 2021. In 2022, we selected Plymouth as our partner to move forward with this project. And so all in all, yeah, about 2 years, honestly. It was like, there was dreaming about this project, I have to share. I mean, we're a council that really wanted to do something wonderful for our community and serve people in need. We recognized the need for housing in our region and wanted to be a part of the solution. I think our original intention was affordable housing for families or mixed use affordability. And then I saw the floor plan and I saw it was for studios and one bedrooms. And that was my first red flag. I went, this doesn't look like it's for families. But then I heard it was for seniors and veterans, people with disabilities. The day after my election, we had our council one-on-ones with our city manager, and our city manager and deputy city manager were there. And they said, we have some bad news. That was the word. Due to funding sources, this is 100% homeless housing.
Whose responsibility is it that it morphed into something different? Who was calling those shots?
You know, I couldn't say. The way I would present this, I'm just going to present it the way I see it.
Sure.
We had a city staff that was, you know, following council direction to bring affordable housing to Kenmore, right? And Plymouth that was excited to have a city open to providing, you know, working with them, partnering with them for housing. And then we had a council that provided direction to, you know, move in this way. I think everyone was working together, excited about the project. Where that miscommunication falls, how do I say that? It's really hard for me to say this, but people couldn't see, or I couldn't see, that there were red flags about this project mm-hmm. until the very end. It was going so smoothly. And then, you know, as I mentioned, day after the election was around when I started going, oh, no.
Yeah, well, it's important to get to the bottom of and suss it out because there are other communities who are going to deal with this. And if it's Plymouth housing that's misleading people, whatever it is, I feel like it's really important to know because that's a big difference between affordable housing for families and then affordable housing for the homeless. So you don't know who to blame for that?
Well, number one, I take some responsibility for myself for not digging deeper. Hmm. Okay. This, you know, I'm just going to be honest with you. I have to take accountability to how I was receiving information, how deeply I was digging. I don't want to be finger pointing to anybody because there are people who worked really hard on this project.
I get that, but at the same time, let's save other cities from the same fate. If there's someone to finger point to, do it.
Yeah, well, what I'm going to say is anyone that is looking at a permanent supportive housing or affordable housing, get in the weeds, understand what it is. This is a major big deal. I've learned so much through this project. I'm a real optimist. I'm a rose-tinted glasses, beautiful, it's a beautiful world, let's make it as good as we can sort of person. And so with my bias of don't judge, right? We were in over our head and didn't know it.
I give you a lot of credit for admitting that, hey, I'm an optimist and I wanted to do this and maybe didn't dig deep enough. And I think that's an important lesson for people because I think we do have a lot of good-hearted optimists who are like, well, of course we want to help with the homelessness crisis, but you know, we need to look at everything that's involved. Do you think, just in hindsight, with everything you know, that the transformation of this from what you thought it was at the beginning to what it actually was, do you think that you were intentionally misled?
I would hate to think that. I really think the people who work for Plymouth care about permanent supportive housing and the work they do, and they provide an important service to our region. I also think they've had a hard time. This isn't their first time going through this sort of a thing. So I don't know. I mean, I think that there's a term that we that our city manager used. It was such a love fest that like our staff, Plymouth Council, we're all really excited about this project, and it failed. And no one likes a failure. I know that our city was naive, is the word that I would say. We didn't see the tidal wave coming. I like to take accountability for myself. Okay. So that's what I've done. I'm like, hey, I can see my mistakes in this process. I can see where I'm at. I know how I can be a better leader. And the number one thing that came out of this for me, I mean, there are a few things I could say, but I'm going to share this. I am so thankful our community came out and shared what they did. And yeah, there were some people that were throwing everything but the kitchen sink. Actually, they threw the kitchen sink in with scary, horrible stories, right? Mm-hmm. And then there were, through the midst of it, incredibly valid points about our responsibility as a council and what we need to be doing for our community. And I had to listen. I had to go, wow, this is right. You know, when we spoke with Governor Inslee, so he called us. It's very unusual for a governor to call local council members. Yeah. And I can see where he was coming from when he was talking to us, because you have to put yourself in their shoes, another person's shoes to hear. And there's a real perception of this word NIMBYism, right? And I think it's really time for us to stop calling each other names,
yeah,
and pointing the finger at each other and saying, you know, this virtue signaling. I'm a lifelong Democrat, okay? I'm pretty sure, you know, I and our council.
I had no idea what you were.
Yeah, no, I am. I could see myself, if I read this story 10 years ago about a small town in Kenmore turning down a project like this,
yeah,
going, you know, rednecks, whatever term you want to use. And if you really look at this project and what a bad fit it was for this moment in time in Kenmore, it's not a never. We are going to show, and this is what I wanted to say to Governor Inslee, we're going to prove you wrong. Our community is going to come together with the solutions that make sense.
You mentioned a phone call from Governor Inslee. Was that before the press conference that I'm going to talk to you about in a moment, that he called you guys, or was it after?
After our vote.
Okay.
I think a week and a half, 10 days after the vote, I think.
But before he called you feckless.
Before he called us feckless, yes. Okay. Before he called us feckless.
So I think that makes it worse because, as I sit here and listen to you, you're obviously very thoughtful. You know, you say you're a lifelong Democrat. You want to do the right thing. It's not a no forever. You listen to your community, and you came to this really thoughtful decision. That was a hard decision. And the governor called and talked to you about it, where I imagine you guys explained the reasoning behind your decision. What was it like for you, Melanie, to hear him call you feckless?
Well, I wasn't surprised. They saw it as something that, how could you stop this project? When I got to the finish line, I thought, how can I vote for this, knowing today? There was a lot of money on the line and obviously political pressure that I wasn't deeply aware of to bring this through.
But knowing all that, Melanie, and you said you're a lifelong Democrat, having a governor of your own political party who you even got a chance to speak to before you said it, call you feckless. I have to imagine there's a level of frustration there.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll tell you why I said what I said.
Yeah.
Democrats are listening to their constituents. If you don't want Trump to be president, you know, do you know why people are voting that way? Because they think he's listening and they think he's doing what you want. We do not. We need to listen. We need to stand up for the people. We need to not say, you're a bad guy. You're a bad guy. You're not good enough. We need to actually be independent thinkers. Pay attention to project by project. Look at the big picture, where things fit in. But, it blows my mind. It blows my mind. Eight years since 2016. And an ironic thing, I'll tell you this. The day Trump was elected, you know what I said?
What's that?
Inslee needs to run for president. I am not kidding.
Oh, no.
I know, but I'm telling you the truth. Yeah, I was like, you know, Washington State's a great state. He's better than other people, and he's an environmentalist. I had all these great reasons. He's a good guy rather than, you know, someone who's a known liar. You know, there were all sorts of things that made Inslee, like, and then he ran. So, you know, I was like, yay. But that's how much of a, how I felt.
Wow.
Right? Okay. So, but for me, I was like, Democrats, wake up. There are a lot of independents. And, you know, I am going to get rid of this word, people in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Independent thinking people who have ideas and values that we need to be listening to. And Democrats need to cross the line, and so do Republicans. We are not one thing. And we actually have to be, instead of looking at how bad we are, how you're doing it wrong, and we can go, what do we want to do, and how can we work together?
Yeah.
And that is the way we have to move forward. Absolutely have to be working together, seeing the good in each other, believing in each other. And so, you know, this is like my happy note, but it's like my vision, you know, like if I have my highest purpose, it's a healthy world where all living things thrive. How do we get there? Well, I'm going to start with myself, right? Now I'm on the council, right? I didn't know I was going to be a council member. You know, that's a whole nother story. It came into my path, and that's what I'm doing today. But I have always believed in the importance of people speaking up for their truth. We have to listen. Sometimes we get a little off track. But listen.
Yeah.
Seek standing and commonality. Because you know what? Every Republican I know cares about clean air, cares about a healthy planet, cares about our democracy, doesn't want a fascist state, cares about freedom of speech. I think every Democrat I know has those same values. How is it that we are so divided when these core values that we truly believe in and want and desire and know we need for our future, for humanity's future, I mean, at a minimum, in a long-term view, I mean, I'm not gonna parse things here, but we can work together when we look at what we really believe in. And that's why I believe our city is going to be able to come up with outstanding housing solutions and be a model for small communities. We learned something a very hard way.
Yeah.
A very hard way. We got stung, but we're coming out strong. And you know what? I'm just here. We have this thing called Coffee with Council. And I went the other day and to meet people who were thankful that I stood up for them meant so much. And you know what? It was more than that. So at the end, one of the women, she pulled me aside and she said, I'm just so thankful for the council listening to us. It made me feel like my voice mattered. That piece of hope that we can work together, that we can create the world that we want to live in. One step at a time. It's by being kind to each other, right? You know, it's okay. You know, we don't have to agree on who the best president is. We don't have to agree on best form of economics. That's a lot of stuff that needs to get there. But maybe let's just be nice and go, gosh, what do we have in common? How can we work together?
I couldn't say it better myself. And, you know, we've never spoken before. We've never met in person before. But I was still mad at when I heard the governor say that about elected leaders who were doing their best with the situation they were dealt with, to hear him call anyone feckless. But now, having spoken to you, you're like the nicest, most positive person. And now it hurts me even more that he called you feckless, because it's just not at all an illustration of who you are, even after this conversation. I'll end with this just because it's fun for me. Would you want him to run for president again?
Oh, I don't know. Here's what I want. I want leaders as president. I do not want party hardliners in office anymore. Not at the Senate, not in the House, not in the president. I want people who can think independently and say, that is wrong. We cannot support that. Just because this industry is in our pockets and funding my campaigns and has so much power, I'm going to say no, because I have to listen to the American people, because we have to work together. I'm tired of, you know, Republicans not voting for, you know, holding up the budget to get one thing through and to get Democrats to work with them. Let's work together. We need to work together.
Amen.
That's it.
I love it, Melanie. I love it. And I totally agree. And, you know, I know you're a lifelong Democrat, but there's plenty of room in the land of independence. If you want to join us, you are more than welcome. We could use your positive energy.
Well, I can share with you a big lesson for me is that labels, I'm not into them.
Good.
I am definitely an independent Democrat, and I have given very strong consideration to becoming a just straight up independent.
Yeah.
I can't believe I said that. I actually thought about whether I was going to disclose that, but I consider myself an independent. I'm an FDR old school Democrat who is an independent today based on how our party is working. And that's what the Democratic Party needs to hear. You're losing people like me. Me. My friends. I don't know how we all get along. But like for me to say that in public on air, I can't believe I did that. It was not being cautious.
Well,
but I really encourage, I mean, I'm a Democrat, you know, I lean left for sure. Independent Democrat. But like, think about that. Losing someone like me who's very passionate about a lot of the Democratic values, and Democrats need to follow through. Don't just say you're going to codify Roe and not do it. Codify it. Don't hold this environment over my head. Don't hold these things over my head to keep my vote if you're not going to do it. Do it. Show up for us, the American people who support these values.
Melanie, you're going to make me cry. I've never had someone come out as an independent to me before. I love it so much. Thank you for speaking out on behalf of your citizens. Especially against a governor of a party you've identified with, and for giving them a voice, because I think there's been a lot of instances around this particular issue where citizens have felt like they were left in the dark, they were misled, their voice wasn't considered, and like the woman told you at coffee, it does matter. People don't feel heard, and so the fact that you took the time to listen and followed through and were attacked for it, and you still have this sunny disposition, I think says a lot about you. So Kenmore Deputy Mayor Melanie O'Kane, we appreciate your time.
Well, thank you.
So there you have it. Kenmore Deputy Mayor Melanie O'Kane says she is no longer a Democrat. She identifies as an independent. You know, not that this one thing and being called feckless by a governor who she once wanted to run for president changed her mind, but just this feeling that like, hey, we're not listening to people. We're not doing what's best for people. It's not like she likes Republicans, but I love this for her. And I think more people who are disappointed with the kind of utterance that the governor put down of, oh, you don't agree with me, you're feckless. And really from both parties, this kind of like othering of people and labeling and lack of desire to problem solve. I mean, if you're frustrated by that, the best thing you can do is ditch the party that you're part of. Because I think they have to learn a lesson somewhere along the line that people have to come before party politics. That's not where we are as a country. So even someone like Melanie, who, you know, lifelong Democrat, she's like, I can't do it anymore. The party isn't putting people first. So really interesting conversation with Kenmore's deputy mayor, Melanie O'Kane. We appreciate her coming on the show. Okay, before we get to our segment, Unbelievable, on a bill that would have protected kids who are exposed to fentanyl in the home, stalling out in Olympia as if they have so many other important things that they're working on that they can't pass a common sense bill to protect kids. We've been talking to our friend Wes Jones of sellwithwes.com about the real estate market. 2023, it wasn't great for the real estate market. And 2024 is sort of a question mark right now. The Fed hasn't dropped interest rates, although Wes says he does believe since it's an election year that they'll feel a little bit of pressure to do so.
They say that the Fed and the presidency, you know, they're not supposed to influence each other. But let's be honest, come on, they're not supposed to.
Right.
But they do. So, you know, Biden's administration is going to do whatever they can to put whatever pressure they can, you know, on the Fed to keep lowering interest rates down, because that's what it's going to make the American population happy and allow people to get into ownership, or at least give them, you know, give them that peace of mind.
Yeah. And so if you're thinking about selling your home and you've kind of been waiting for the Fed to drop interest rates because you know that's going to be the best thing to get a bunch of people out there looking at your house and get good offers, you need to make sure your home is ready to hit the market ASAP when that happens. So reach out to Wes, sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, and ask him about the services that they offer. They've got something called the Listing Boost Concierge Service where they can come in and do any cosmetic updates to your home that need to be done. They can manage those projects, even pay for them up front. So check out a few real estate agents by all means, but don't choose one until you visited sellwithwes.com and talked to Wes Jones. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, in the House Public Safety Committee, a bill appears to be stalled that would increase the punishment for parents who expose their children to fentanyl. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. All right, so there's a couple of bills that have been introduced this legislative session around protecting kids in homes where there might be active substance abuse. Now, we had Representative Travis Couture on the show who talked about an effort to make it easier to remove a child from a home where there's active substance abuse and calling that imminent harm. Now, that bill is still alive in Olympia, a version of it, not his version, but a watered-down Democratic version. But the bill we're going to talk about right now, which appears to be going nowhere, stuck in the House Public Safety Committee, where all things to improve public safety go to die. It seems really counterintuitive. This is a different bill, but it deals with a similar problem. Senate Bill 5010 would do something very simple. Right now on our books, there's something called endangerment with a controlled substance. So it's basically child endangerment with a controlled substance. But right now, the only drug that includes is meth. And so this would change that, and it would include fentanyl. It would say a person is guilty of the crime of endangerment with a controlled substance if the person knowingly or intentionally permits a dependent child or dependent adult to be exposed to, ingest, inhale, or have contact with fentanyl or synthetic opioids or the smoke of a substance that the person knows or reasonably should know contains or is contaminated with fentanyl or synthetic opioids or meth. That seems very reasonable. Like, yeah, that is, if you have a child, why should it matter whether you intentionally or knowingly expose them to meth or fentanyl? I know King County Metro doesn't think meth and fentanyl smoke are a big deal, but those of us with common sense and a brain know that that is absolutely a big deal, especially for a small child. And even the Seattle Times editorial board, which God knows I've had my issues with recently, even the ed board over the Times encouraged Democrats in Olympia to pass this bill. They published an op-ed, the headline pretty simple, add fentanyl to child endangerment law. And they gave an example of a case that they used to say this is justified. We have to do this. It reads, about 2 a.m. on March 5th, 2022, Seattle medics and police responded to a call about a 2-year-old girl who had ingested fentanyl. The father said his daughter had taken pills kept in a diaper bag, which included other drug paraphernalia. Because he was concerned about outstanding warrants, he waited about 30 minutes before flagging someone to call 911. The child was rushed to Seattle Children's Hospital, and police reports indicate she was stabilized. Her 39-year-old father was booked into jail and charged with a misdemeanor. He pleaded guilty and spent two months in jail. State child endangerment law makes such accidental or negligent poisonings a felony, but only if the incident involved methamphetamine. A bill now in Olympia would change that, specifically adding fentanyl. If you thought that such a proposal would be uncontroversial, guess again. Lawmakers risk allowing ideological grudge matches to get in the way of protecting kids. So even the Seattle Times, and that's a prime example of, with this particular dad, had it been methamphetamine that was in this diaper bag along with the paraphernalia, he would have been charged with a felony. But because it was fentanyl, it was a misdemeanor? That makes no sense. And so here you have this bill that's moving forth, has bipartisan support, but now it's locked up in the House Public Safety Committee. And Chair Roger Goodman, who I thought at times, the Democrat, has been a reasonable guy, but seems to be going over to the same woke ideology of like the Tara Simmons types. And this idea that, like, look, I have sympathy for people who are addicted to drugs. Absolutely. I think the very first thing that we need to do is get them help. But I also want to get them help before they kill a kid. You also want to get them help before it gets to the point where they leave fentanyl laying around in a diaper bag with their other paraphernalia and their child ingests it and dies. At that point, you've killed a child. And you don't deserve a slap on the wrist. I mean, if this child had died, obviously, you know, we'd be talking about different charges. But when you expose them to a drug that can kill them so easily, to think that it's a misdemeanor when it's fentanyl and it's a felony when it's meth, when the drug that's plaguing our communities right now the most is fentanyl, when the drug that is deadliest is fentanyl, fentanyl is way more deadly than meth. So at least bringing those two drugs, bringing parity there under state statute, that makes a lot of sense. And as the Times says, that shouldn't be controversial. But in today's crazy world where it's like, oh, we've got to coddle criminals and we've got to coddle drug addicts and put their health and their well-being ahead of children, innocent children, that's how a bill like this that should sail on through to the governor's desk gets bogged down in a committee that has the audacity to still continue to be called the Public Safety Committee. Time to change the name of that committee. Unbelievable. All right, changing gears quite a bit. We have an event happening on Sunday that's very near and dear to our hearts that we wanted to let you guys know about and extend an invitation to. So, of course, it's been just over a year since we lost our friend Dory Monson. And his wife, Suzanne, you know, right after he passed away and he had this, you know, serious cardiac episode, she said that one of the things that she wanted to do to honor his memory is to teach other people CPR. You know, CPR, when Dory had his cardiac episode, Suzanne was right there. She was able to jump in, administer CPR, and it bought the family enough time for his daughters to say goodbye to him. So Suzanne, from the very beginning, was very passionate about it. So this Sunday, there is going to be a free hands-on CPR and AED class from 12 to 5 p.m. at Shoreline College. It's called When Women Will. It's hosted and organized by Dory Monson's family. Space is limited, but you are encouraged to register and sign up so they know how many people might come. And while it is called When Women Will, and Suzanne is really passionate about targeting this event toward women, everyone is welcome to register. You can do so at shorelinefire.com/events. But Suzanne was nice enough to come on with us today and talk about why she's so passionate about this issue. Suzanne, thanks for being here.
It's always a joy to see you in that, Nicole, Brandy. Thank you.
Well, having you on the show, man, that's a joy for us. That's a treat. I know you don't want sympathy or anything like that, but there's going to be a lot of people watching who've been thinking about you and thinking about the girls and who are just going to want to know how you're doing.
We are moving. I never want to say we're moving on because that would suggest that we're moving away or that we've forgotten, but we are in motion.
Yeah. So this is something that you had this idea, I mean, almost right away after we lost Dory, to have a seminar where people can come in and they can learn CPR. Why is this one of the first things you thought of for a way to kind of honor Dory?
I know that all of your listeners, all of your audience, I know you and Nicole realize how sudden it was. And often people who come from a news background like you, like me, we go into this autopilot where we start to research. And when I discovered how many people suffer sudden cardiac arrest each year and how few people are trained in it, I was really shaken when the first responders came to our home the night of his cardiac arrest. They high-fived me for doing CPR. And I thought, well, that's a little odd. And then when we got to the ER at Northwest Hospital, where the physicians were great, they high-fived me too. And they said how few people actually A, know how to use CPR, or B, if they know, they become paralyzed and it doesn't kick in. And I thought, that's something I can try to do something about.
Yeah. And, you know, Dory, what happened to him was so catastrophic that it's hard to know whether anything, I mean, you reacted so quickly. You were right there. Everything happened so quickly. But knowing CPR did buy your family some valuable time. Can you talk about that?
That was priceless. So CPR can double the rate of survival, but in our case and in others, it doesn't assure survival. But two of our three daughters were out of town, and it was just Dory and me and the dog home that evening. And 2.5 minute response from the first responders, who used AED and resuscitated his heart twice and rushed him to the hospital. That amount of time bought us an opportunity for all of us to gather, to be in his room together 48 hours later when the doctors told us that there was no hope, and to put Billy Joel lullaby on the music and cradle him. And I felt his soul lift to heaven. And that gift is priceless to me. And I would do anything to give any other person out there that opportunity, if not for survival, at least knowing that they lived a life of no regret by taking action.
Yeah. And you know, Dory lived his life in a way, and you guys all did, the whole family. It's just about helping others and making the world a better place. And, you know, doing something like this and giving this gift to other people in this training is helping who knows how many other individuals. So tell me how Sunday is going to work. Now, anyone can come, but you are kind of giving a special call out to women because they might be the most likely to have to respond in a situation like this.
Exactly. So most sudden cardiac arrest, and this doesn't even count a heart attack, can occur at home and in the workplace. And so if it's at home, it's likely that it's going to be a mom or a wife or a daughter who is going to need to perform CPR. Men are more likely to have sudden cardiac arrest, but women are more likely to die from it. And why is that? Because often men won't jump in to help a woman. And again, the fear, the inexperience, it can happen to both genders, but empowering women in this is, I think, what Dory would want to do. He was someone who empowered his female colleagues. He was my greatest cheerleader. He was a phenomenal dad, and he was a great coach. And so I think that this targeting women during American Heart Month and Valentine's Month, so to show the love and learn CPR and AED. And we're going to have many, many mannequins and very many trained paramedics on hand to teach it. And it's hands-on. It's free. Not all classes are free. So we're really proud of that. We have a grant from Lake Forest Park Rotary to provide some light catering and to learn more about how to make a 911 call. You think it sounds easy, but in the heat of the moment, a lot of people freeze. So we want to take that paralysis and empower women to feel that.
Yeah, I love that. And I've shared with you, I know we're talking about CPR, but it is such a helpless feeling to be in a situation and not be able to provide aid to someone. And, you know, Mike, when I was choking on a cucumber, he went in there and went right to his training and did the Heimlich just like you see in the movies and the thing just shot out. And I thought to myself, oh my gosh, what if he hadn't known how to do that? Or what if he hadn't been there? And you just never know. You never know when you might be able to use it. So if people want to sign up and join us on Sunday, you're going to be there. I'm going to be there. Nicole's going to be there. I know you have family and friends who are going to be there. How can they join in?
So you can pre-register at shorelinefire.com/events. That's shorelinefire.com/events. We highly recommend pre-registration. If the course fills up, we hope to do it again, maybe in another part. So it's at Shoreline College, which is in North King County. But if we find success here, maybe we'll take it on the road to South King County next time.
Well, I love it. And I'm so glad that you did this. I'm grateful for Shoreline Fire and their assistance with this. And we'll see you on Sunday. And I'm excited to leave feeling empowered and like I've got a new tool in my tool belt to help people.
Exactly. Action. All right. Thank you.
So again, if you'd like to sign up, you can do that at shorelinefire.com/events. That's shorelinefire.com/events. I'll be there. Nicole will be there. And I look forward to learning CPR. I actually can't believe I don't already know it. I feel really irresponsible, but I think it'll be great. So 12 p.m. to 5 p.m. on Sunday at Shoreline College, shorelinefire.com/events. All right, coming up next, we'll get to our weekly segment, Florida Report. Apparently, DeSantis might not be so on the outs with Donald Trump. Who knows? First, I've been urging you guys to take the First Mark Challenge. Just set aside an hour. It'll pay dividends in the long run to take the First Mark Challenge and see if you should move all your insurance needs over to First Mark. Mike and I took the First Mark Challenge about a year ago. It just takes a little bit of time. You talk about your current insurance. You talk about your insurance needs. They go out. They shop the market for you for free. Never costs you anything. You don't pay First Mark a dime. They came back to us and said, hey, here's what we think you ought to have. We were way underinsured, so we got better insurance for the same price. And now they handle our insurance moving forward. If we have an issue, our first call is to First Mark, and somebody actually picks up the phone, a local company, imagine that, and they take care of everything. Dave Taylor is the CEO of First Mark.
I really want to encourage folks, don't try to navigate this current market by yourself. Mm-hmm. I believe you need to get with a broker. Okay, obviously I'd love them to come to First Mark, but at a minimum, they need to be with a broker that works with numerous carriers that can give them the advice they need and really help them navigate this right now because it's complicated.
Yeah, and he's talked about the captive carriers. There are insurance brokers out there who they only sell one product from one insurance company. That's not First Mark. They have a lot of different insurance companies they can go out to try to get you the best insurance at the best price for free. They're not going to charge you anything. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. Take the First Mark Challenge today. They work for you. Okay, dipping outside of Washington State, Ron DeSantis, he dropped out of the presidential race. I thought, man, he's dropping out a little early. I didn't expect him to throw in the towel so soon. But maybe he did that with the hopes that Donald Trump would choose him as his vice presidential running mate. I don't know, but the former president is not ruling that out. Let's talk about it on our segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, greetings.
Greetings.
Wow, it seems like Ron DeSantis is maybe back in Trump's good graces, maybe a little bit?
Maybe, just a little bit. I don't know. At a town hall on Tuesday, he was kind of asked if he had a short list for who he'd want his vice presidential candidates to be, and he said yes. And so the host of the town hall had asked, like, or had given a list of names, and DeSantis was included. And he says, yes, they're all on my list. They're all strong, solid people. So we'll see what happens. I mean, there is a 12th Amendment right that I actually just learned about that the president and the vice president can't live in the same state. So one of them would have to move. And it can't be DeSantis because he's our governor.
Now, let me debunk that for you, Miranda.
Oh, okay. Debunk it.
Yeah, sorry. See, this is a lesson in real time. That's all right. You're not a politics person. Technically, it was framed for a different time in this country, but basically you can still run from the same state as president and vice president on the same ticket. The only time it would become problematic is if it were so close that Florida's votes were the ones that were going to make or break the election, and then you would run into a tricky situation. You can do it, but it's not like blatantly disallowed as some people believe. So just little known fact.
Understandable now, yes.
I don't necessarily think it's a good idea either way to have someone from the same state. Yeah. I just don't think that that's appealing to the widest range of people. I think DeSantis is too close politically to Donald Trump. He needs someone who's going to bring in other people to the mix. And I just don't see DeSantis being that person. Yeah. All right. As we talk about the ups and downs of the legislative session in Olympia, let's see what's happening in your legislative session. The Senate has passed a bill in Florida that would teach kindergartners about the threats of communism.
Yes. So this bill would basically, well, right now, I mean, in most schools, I think across the country, they teach a little bit of communism from seventh grade on up through civics and social studies classes. But this would have lessons as young as kindergarten to teach. And it says that they would have to be age and developmentally appropriate. I don't know how you make the topic of communism age appropriate for a kindergartner, but so they're going to start teaching them early about the threats of communism.
Yeah, I mean, I guess like the kid could bring lunch to school. You could take everyone's lunch who brought it to school, and then you divvy it up equally among people, including the little kids who didn't bring their lunch to school, and just, you know, public property. Yeah. So there's some lessons maybe with some blocks or something that you could incorporate. I think this is silly. I don't know how you would teach a meaningfully age-appropriate lesson to kindergartners about socialism.
Yeah, and or communism, rather. Florida in itself, I think, is a little special when it comes, especially South Florida, because we have so many like immigrants from Cuba and people who have family members that were like directly under the influence of communism. So yeah. I think some of that does get taught at home actually already pretty early. And a lot of these people are the ones kind of speaking out in favor of this bill. But I think as you go a little farther north, it might not hit as close to home for some people, the conversation of communism to children.
I just don't know what good it's going to do a kindergartner. You know, wait till they're old enough to grasp some of the concepts that you're trying to teach them. I just think that's kind of strange. Okay, we're having a lot of conversations and debates and lies in Washington State around funding for environmental issues. So in Florida, there is an interesting bill under consideration that would use gambling money for environmental projects.
Yeah, correct. So back in 2021, DeSantis had reached an agreement with the Seminole Tribe of Florida that would basically allow them to offer sports betting throughout the state in addition to some like in-casino games like craps. And in exchange for that, they would do kind of like a pledge of some of those funds that they're now making off of these new games they're offering, up to like $2.5 billion over the period of the first 5 years, and then the pact goes about three decades. They've already paid about $58 million of that, and all these funds are being appropriated to all types of environmental things in Florida, from preventing sea rise issues, expanding the wildlife corridor, protecting our endangered local species, and also helping rid and control the population of invasive species, water treatment, all types of stuff. So I think it's kind of interesting that they were able to find so much money to help with these things in our state.
Yeah, without stealing it from working class people at the gas pump and then lying about it. Wow, imagine that. Florida really on the cutting edge of public service. All right, Miranda, yeah. We appreciate it. Your hair looks so blonde. Did you dye it blonder?
No, it's just getting very sunny out, so I get my natural blonde down here.
Sorry I asked. I don't want to hear crap about the sun in Florida. All right, Miranda, appreciate it.
Bye.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Every Thursday, we have on our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital to help us understand what's happening in this crazy economy a little bit better. Today, we're talking about something called leading economic indicators. Do you know what they are? And do you know how to assess them? Because depending on what news entity you read, the current leading economic indicators are either forecasting a recession or not forecasting a recession. And it's very, very confusing. And that's why we have Zach. Zach Abraham, welcome back to Undivided.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I guess. We just had a beef off air because I found out Zach doesn't follow me on Twitter.
Okay, so hold on. Are you going to tell him the other part?
Oh, that I just started following you 2 minutes ago? No, I don't see how that's relevant. Right.
So because she's on it and now my computer's turned to this, I couldn't beat her to it.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, no, that's all right. You don't appreciate anything I have to say. I really rely on your expertise.
No, I thought I had, Paul. I'm surprised. You know what funny is the reason this probably happened is I have been on Twitter less in the last 4 months than probably like since I started. Just because I've been so busy, but also when markets get insane, I found that it's like it doesn't help. Like it's just, it's more noise, you know, and it's just better if I just pull back. But yeah, so in the Twitter game, then you will be a follower of mine for all of, you know, 10 minutes longer than I am yours.
Well, yeah, and it depends. I mean, if you don't follow me soon, I'm unfollowing. So that's how it works. But I love how he turned that into advice about, hey, don't go to Twitter to figure out what's happening with the economy. All right. So I want you to give us all a little lesson today on what the leading economic index is, because it's in the headlines. So LEI, what is it?
Yeah, so we talk about this all the time, leading economic indicators. So it's really funny to watch quote unquote financial people in the media comment on this, because what you find out is that, like in most cases, they'll talk as much about it as you'll listen. They don't know what they're talking about, though. So I would say that right now, leading economic indicators are not what we call hard data. So hard data would be an unemployment number, right? Whereas I think you and I have talked before about hours worked. That would be a leading economic indicator, meaning hours worked, if it is dropping, it is usually pointing to lower employment rates, right, or higher unemployment rates. So it's not the hard data point. For housing, a good example on housing, a hard economic data point would be new housing starts, right? A soft economic data point would be housing permits, right? Meaning typically, we can see the ramp of how many houses are going to come online based on how many building permits have been issued. So when you look at all the leading economic trends, it's really complicated, but it's really simple. Pretty much all the leading economic trends are telling you recession, right? The counterpoint is the government's dumping $2.5 trillion in the other side.
Yeah.
Right. It's really that simple at this point.
Yeah, and you mentioned, as you listed a couple of them, it makes sense how these are leading economic indicators. So you mentioned average weekly hours of manufacturing workers, building permits for new private housing units, average weekly initial applications for unemployment insurance, manufacturers' new orders for consumer goods and materials, things like that. So here's why I want to talk to you about this today, because, and it's just another indicator of why it's getting harder and harder to figure out who to trust when it comes to what the economy is doing. So this is from Business Insider. Mm-hmm. These are both published like within hours of each other, okay? Business Insider.
And I don't know what they say, but I will just tell you, generally speaking, Business Insider is a much more trustable brand than probably wherever else you got that other one.
Okay, well, let's see if you're correct. Business Insider says, a trusted indicator is fueling recession warnings. What you should know about the leading economic index. And then this is from Reuters. Leading economic index no longer signals U.S. recession.
Yeah. So Business Insider versus Reuters. Reuters, they threw some junior recent graduate with a journalist degree on that story, right? And they're like, oh, 50% means expansion. And you're like, that's not the way this works, right? Yeah. Yes, it does mean, but right, like nothing goes in a straight line, right? So even we look at stock markets or even unemployment numbers, you know, when you look at it, it's not consistent. You know, you get this and you get this. So what we look for is trend changes, right? Meaning if I see the line going down like this for unemployment and all of a sudden you get a hot jobs report and it busts up above that line, that's something to pay attention to. But what they're saying is that this little hump right here, basically a slowdown in bad things means, oh, works. Now it could end up meaning that, but this is where the media takes like this little tiny thing. And I don't even think it's on well, look, we all know who the general media wants to win this year, right?
Yeah.
So I think you're going to see more of that extrapolation. But no, it's all nonsense. If you look at the leading economic indicators, they are pointing recessionary. Delinquency rates keep rising. Credit card balances keep rising. Home car delinquencies are at record levels we hadn't seen since 2010. Okay, so you know what doesn't happen in a booming economy? People aren't losing their cars left and right.
Yeah.
Okay? So, but like I said, it's kind of an economic tug of war. You've got all the natural parts of the economy. They want to go into recession. They are tired. They are beleaguered. But you just have this avalanche of cash coming in the other side.
So we appreciate Zach coming on with us, and I appreciate him actively going to follow me on Twitter. I'm sure that's happening right now. But given everything we talk about and how complex these issues are, you know, it is hard to actively manage your own risk. You work hard for your retirement. I think leaving it up to chance, and especially in an election year, the global unrest, unforeseen market fluctuations, it's you've worked too hard for your retirement. I mean, you need it in the hands of an expert. So protecting your portfolio with risk management, it's critical. I suggest having a free Know Your Risk portfolio review with Zach and his team at Bulwark Capital. Their portfolio review, it's just a great way to see if you're overexposed to risk. There's no obligation. In fact, Bulwark doesn't even let you invest at their first meeting. So whether you become a client or not, you will leave much more informed about the risk to your retirement. Schedule your free risk review now at knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. All right, since it's not technically a live show, we have no comments. I'm sure, Nicole, you want to come in for a second? You're going to be reading comments, but in the future.
Yeah, I'll try to respond throughout the show.
You know, you can give them a little like, hey, I see you.
Okay.
I'm sure they're great.
I'll do that.
Per the usual. What are you doing this weekend? Well, we have the CPR class that we're going to be doing.
We're doing that. I have a friend coming in from Alaska, so I'm going out. Supposedly, we're going dancing. It's not my thing. You know this.
What kind of dancing?
I don't know. I think it's with one of my friends who's a nurse, and I used to hang out in my 20s with her and all her nurse friends, and they're reliving their youth this weekend, apparently.
I don't ever want to dance. I'll slow dance.
It's not my jam. I'm going to hold coats and purses.
Come on, but you know, if there's a cute guy, dance with him, you know? A little bump and grind.
Like a 20-year-old, I'm sure it's going to be a 20-year-old dude.
Where do you go dancing?
Actually, she did tell me.
Well, don't say it, because then somebody will come and they'll grind with you, and it'll be weird. But not that you guys are creepy, but somebody might see it.
The red hen is more my style, right?
Oh, that's like country line dance and stuff.
To watch. Yeah. I like to watch. I'm not a big dancer.
Nicole likes to watch. Interesting. Learn something new about you every day. Okay. Well, very exciting. We have a great Sunday show coming up this week with a whistleblower. So I'll talk about that more coming up momentarily. But good job lining up these interviews with the Sunday shows lately.
Yeah. We also have the candidate interviews. I just want, if you want to, already posted one and another one's coming. So.
Yep. So you'll see these continue to drop throughout 2024 when we have an in-depth interview with a candidate for office, rather than have it, you know, behind a paywall or whatever it is. It'll be posted individually so you can share it. Go to Patreon and Locals. So we had on a couple earlier this week, but Chad Magandons, who is running for superintendent of public instruction, we had a great conversation in depth about, imagine this, getting back to a place where academics is the key focus of our public schools. Really controversial stuff. So
I
recommend.
I'm so hopeful this year. I'm so hopeful.
Yes. I recommend you checking that out. And then tonight we're going to have an interview drop with a candidate for state Supreme Court, which is something that you guys always complain. Nobody covers those races. Nobody runs for those races.
I know.
We have a candidate coming up this evening.
I mean, lately, judges. Ugh. Yeah. So, yes. Pay attention, people.
Super frustrating. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. With that, let's get to our closing sanity check. All right, CNN reports that President Joe Biden is considering stopping migrants at the border. This is, again, from CNN. Biden considering new executive action to restrict asylum at the border, sources say. And I'm going to read part of the CNN story to you because I'm like all on board with this. It makes so much sense. I don't see what's controversial about it. Yes, we have an asylum process in this country, but you can cross at a legal port of entry and claim asylum. It says the White House is considering executive action to restrict migrants' ability to seek asylum at the U.S.-Mexico border if they crossed illegally. A maneuver reminiscent of controversial action from the Donald Trump era and is sure to invite fierce backlash from immigration advocates and progressives. Yes, it does. We'll get to that momentarily. The handling of the U.S.-Mexico border has dogged President Joe Biden for years as migration across the Western Hemisphere reached record levels and resulted in thousands of migrants arriving at the border. The action being considered at the White House appears to be an extension of some of the toughest measures in the border compromise legislation tanked by Republicans and another sign of the White House's efforts to show they're aggressive on border security ahead of Election Day. No final decision has been made on the action under consideration, which involves using an authority known as 212F between ports of entry to try to clamp down on unlawful border crossings. An administration official noted that the administration often evaluates actions that could be taken, but they don't always move forward. I thought Joe Biden said he's done everything he can do on the border. That's what he told reporters outside the White House. I've done everything I can do. No, you haven't done everything you can do. But this makes a lot of sense. And it also helps with the strained resources, some of these communities that are absolutely inundated with asylum seekers. If you have a legitimate asylum claim, you can go right through a port of entry, like a bunch of people do legally every day as they're crossing back and forth. So this seems reasonable. He's not saying you can't seek asylum. He's saying go through an official port of entry. But as CNN predicted, the backlash is already fierce from immigration advocates and progressives like our Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal, who is calling it cruel. Cruel. She says this would be an extremely disappointing mistake. Cruel enforcement-only policies have been tried for 30 years and simply do not work. Democrats cannot continue to take pages out of Donald Trump and Stephen Miller's playbook. We need to lead with dignity and humanity. What's happening right now isn't dignity and humanity, not in the slightest. And it is not cruel to say you can seek asylum, but hey, can you do us a solid and come through a port of entry so we don't have, first of all, a dangerous situation? How many migrants have drowned in the Rio Grande? How many migrants die on the journey? How many migrant children are raped? And how many people are victimized? Is that leading with dignity and humanity? Not at all. Some of the things these migrants go through on their journey up to seek asylum is horrific. You know, dying in car crashes when they get smuggled across the border. What Biden is suggesting that we should do is incredibly humane. Yeah, let people come seek asylum. If they have a legitimate reason to do so, let's process them at a port of entry. And honestly, that helps everyone out. But the issue is Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal just doesn't want to stop the influx of migrants into our country. She has no interest in doing that whatsoever. All right, I do hope to see some of you in Olympia tomorrow at noon on the north steps of the Capitol. Let's go Washington. Having another rally in support of those initiatives, trying to keep up the momentum on those. So it'd be nice to see your smiling faces. Also, we have a wonderful interview coming up this Sunday on Sundays with Subscribers. A therapist turned whistleblower who used to work at MultiCare is talking about what she went through as a therapist, particularly when it came to patients who were children who might have gender dysphoria. So we're going to have a conversation with her. If you'd like to become a subscriber, you can sign up at undividedpod.com.